Okay, welcome in another episode of That's So Cincinnati. We're going to do things a little different this week. We have a special, special guest, Marty Brenneman, and we want to dedicate most of this episode to our interview with him. So we're not going to talk politics this week or current events. We're going to dedicate most of this episode to Marty. Before we jump over to him, I want to invite everyone out to Braxton Brewing next Tuesday, August 13th at 5 p.m. on Braxton's rooftop, West 7th Street in Covington. The That's So Cincinnati podcast goes on the road, recording live from Braxton's rooftop. Sherry Coolidge and I will be there with our executive producer, Phil Didion. And want to invite you out. Come on out. Grab a beer. Say hi to us. Listen. Come up. We want to invite people to come on and share some things about beer and Cincinnati. And just want to thank Braxton for having us out. And we want you to come out as well. So come on out. Join us. And let's now jump to Marty. All right, welcome into another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Exciting episode today. I don't think we need to, you know, sit here and belabor the point, but we bring in the Hall of Fame broadcaster, Marty Brenneman. And Marty, thanks so much for being with us. It really means a lot. I know a lot of people are tugging at you right now for you to take some time out to do this. Just want to thank you for doing
it. Jason, you and I go back a lot of years.
Yes,
whatever I can do for you, pal, and Sherry, glad to be on with you.
Thank you for coming and seeing us.
My pleasure, believe me.
You knew me before I was nothing. I'm still nothing.
Well, no, you were a baseball writer, but you paved the way for your current occupation because you were a very inquisitive young man.
Well, you know, growing up listening to you and you call it like you see it, and it's weird to think how I don't think I've ever. You kind of subconsciously think about it, but it is my style is to just call it like you see it, and that's your style. And I don't know where that came from for me. I mean, I grew up, my mom's a very strong-willed person, yeah. But you know, you think about growing up, and every kid in this town has that story about listening to Marty and Joe and laying in bed at night.
Yep.
And I don't know, like, I've always loved that style of. You call it like you see it. It's brutally honest, and if people like it, they like it, and if they don't, then so what?
Well, to be honest with you, it's a least pleasurable road to travel in my profession. There are a lot of guys that want to be revered and loved by players, and
yep.
And in order for them to do that, they've got to be guys that are be willing to never be critical, and I don't view it that way. If players have a problem with what I say, then that's just the way it is. I mean, I'm old enough at this stage of my life that I'm could certainly be their granddads and in some cases great grandfathers.
Yeah.
So I can't be concerned about what they don't like and what they like. My basic philosophy is if I'm going to praise you when you play well, that I reserve the right to be critical when you don't.
Yeah.
And if I ever write a book, it's going to deal with guys that understood what my job was and that I never. Yep. Level of criticism at a player because of any personal reason. I've never had a personal problem with a player that would shade my ability to do a job.
Yep.
So, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to broadcast the games working for people that allow me to do what I do. I know they cringe at times about some of the things I say.
Yep.
But that's the nature of the beast.
Well, it's a style that is audience focused. You're not there to make friends with the players. You're there to tell the story of the game and what you're covering, and you're there for the audience.
I am, but having said that, I think more and more today, I told a group the other day, if I were a young guy coming now, I couldn't get a job. Not with this style.
That was a question I wanted to ask you. If you were to start today.
Never happened.
What's the difference?
Really? Because I think today, quite honestly, I think there's more censorship imposed upon guys broadcasting, I'm sure, college sports as well as professional sports. I had a guy tell me, our engineer in Atlanta, where we were last weekend, who's been working with me since 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And he also does the visiting teams that come into Atlanta to play the Hawks. He said there are three or four brand new play-by-play guys in the NBA this year. That's almost unheard of. And I know in two cases, there are guys that said things in the heat of battle that pissed off the owners of the yep. club, and they're no longer there. I don't believe I could get a job today. I truly do not. And I think that's unfortunate. I'm not a big fan of censorship, especially in a guy that does the kind of work that I do, where you have to measure every single word that comes out of your mouth for fear of reprisal.
Yeah.
I couldn't operate like that. And as I said earlier, I'm fortunate that with all the ownership groups I've worked for, I've had the latitude to broadcast a game the way I see it. And I see it through the eyes of a fan.
Yep.
And if I didn't have the support of the people that listened to us and religiously turned their radios on to listen when Joe and I were together for 31 years, and more recently with Brantley and I over a decade, I wouldn't have had the job anyway. They'd have found somebody else. It was more mm-hmm. appealing to the people that are considered to be fans. So I don't have any regret about the road I've traveled. I never consciously sat down and said, well, you know what, I'm going to be outspoken and I'm going to be controversial. I never did that. It just evolved. It was something evolved. Jack Billingham said to me after a game in 1976. It might have been 75, but they'd beaten the Atlanta Braves like 25-7. And he had pitched the night before. And I said to him the next day, I said, boy, that's a great game we played last night. Yeah. And he said, we? Yeah. How many hits did you get? How many people did you get out? That was a defining moment in my career. I've never done it since then. I mean, that, as my good friend Mark Wicker says, who is a great writer with the Orange County newspaper and is a dear friend of mine, that famous French word meaning yes, I don't use that word.
Do you? I want to ask you, I know you, and I've heard you tell that story before about the we. And
yeah.
Did your style, did it evolve, or is it a personality? Was it always your personality? Did you get that from your mom or your dad or some other broadcaster that you adopted?
No, I inherited it more than anything. My dad had the innate ability to put his foot in his mouth in just casual conversation. So I think I probably picked up on it from him. When I first came here, I was a cheerleader. I thought that's what the club wanted. I thought that's what would give me a long and successful career. And then the longer I worked, the more I realized that that's not me. I think guys that are cheerleaders, and I don't criticize anybody's style. You do what's comfortable. Mm-hmm. But that's not my style. And I think there's an innate feeling by guys that are cheerleaders. They want people to think that they're a part of what's going on down on the field.
Yep.
I'm not a part of that. I mean, that's a closed fraternity. I have nothing to do with that. And so for me to say we and refer to the other team as they, that's imposing upon the listener something that's not true. And
yep.
so I just evolved into what I am now and what I have been for many, many years. And I'm pleased with the way it's worked out.
What you do is like part of the official record of the game.
Sure.
Like being a cheerleader is not that. That's what the fans are doing. But you're chronicling the history of the game and how you call it. It has to be accurate.
Well, that's the thing we strive for. I've told people before, if there's any legacy that I have when they – And I pass on to an afterlife, whatever that might be, is that I had credibility. Because I don't think any of us could do a job if you don't have a measure of credibility that what you say and what you write in the eye and the ear of the listener or the reader, that what you say is accurate and is not colored by any particular brand of prejudice. I just don't think you can do that. And so I've worked my rear end off to be as objective as I can. Now, do I want this club to win? Sure I do. I mean, it makes my job easier. I think it's human nature to have a better time saying nice things than it is to be critical. But I also learned when Sparky Anderson told me that for a month into my job in 74, when I'd take every loss home, and he called me in his office one day and he said, I want to tell you something. I said, what? He said, I think you've got a chance to have a great career in this profession, but if you're going to take every loss home with you, you're not going to last very long. He said there are millions and millions and millions of people in China who do not know who the Cincinnati Reds are. He said, I'm the guy who's paid to worry about wins and losses, not you. And from that day forward, I may get bent out of shape, I got real bent out of shape Saturday night in Atlanta. But when I walk out of that radio booth, slate's wiped clean. I close the door and tomorrow's a new day.
Do you feel it when the team is like on a losing streak and they're not putting as many fans in the seats? Does that affect like what you're doing in the booth?
No, I don't think so. You know, you go to the ballpark every day thinking that it's going to be a different outcome. That's the beauty of baseball. I mean, it's not like football. You have a bad Sunday, and now you got 6 days to worry and think about what happened and also try to clear your mind and get set for whoever you're playing the next Saturday or the next Sunday. Baseball, you got to have short-term memory loss, and you got to forget about what happened last night and go out and try to win today. And I go back to the ballpark and the next day, and however upset I might have been about the way they played the night before, or giving a game away or whatever the case might be, I don't reflect back upon it the next day.
This is a question I've really always wanted to ask you, and it's you talked about not being one of the players. Obviously, yeah. You're not a part of that fraternity
nope.
itself, but you do work in and around baseball, and maybe this is a little bit of an out of left field question, but I don't think people realize for people who work in and around baseball that how big of a grind it is. So even they probably don't realize how big of a grind it is for the players. You look great.
Thank you.
How hard is it to stay in shape and keep yourself healthy when you're constantly on the road and there's always free food and drinks in front of you? And I think this is something that people, the general public, don't realize, you know, the temptations that are out there in terms of this.
Well, you got to be able to walk away from it.
Yeah.
You know,
how have you been able to do that?
I don't know. I made a pact with myself about 7 years ago that I don't know. And I read it. I came across one day that the universal the universal number as far as how many steps you take a day is 10,000 minimum. They had me. I went out and bought a Fitbit. And I have walked an average of 70,000 steps a week,
wow.
Give or take, depending upon circumstances, for the last 7 years. I got up this morning at 7 o'clock because I had to be downtown for a luncheon. I had to leave early, and I got on the treadmill. I walked at 3 miles, and I think that's helped me a lot. I have COPD from smoking for millions and millions of years mm-hmm. and quit in 1990, and I have an inhaler, but I just take 2 puffs a day, and I have some limitation. I mean, I go up a flight of steps, and if it's a fairly long flight of steps, I'm winded, but I can't get over that. That's a curse I have from smoking cigarettes. But other than that, I mean, I just turned 77. I don't know a guy. I don't know anybody that's as healthy, knock on wood, as mm-hmm. I am at 77 years old. And I understand that an actuary will tell you, I don't give a damn how healthy you are. At your age, you could drop dead in the next 5 minutes with an aneurysm or a heart attack or anything. So I accept the fact that I retired at a great time because I'm healthy enough to go and do what I want to do when I want to do it. When Joe retired, he was physically unable to do a lot of the things that he had planned on doing. And that made a major impact upon me. I said, that's not going to happen to me. And so I'm blessed that I'm going out on my own terms, and I think I'm still on top of my game. But Vin Scully said to me a number of years ago, and he's become a dear friend to me, and I'm honored to be able to say that he's a friend of mine because he's the best baseball announcer who ever lived. He said, we are in a profession that is rather unique because you can work as long as you want to, as long as you don't upset the people that pay your salary, and you are still verbally able to do the job. But it's also a curse because guys will work longer than they should because they can. And without naming names, I know some guys that have hung around this game and they're not nearly what they were years ago, but they hang around because they don't have anything else to do. And I'm married to a young woman who will not let me sit on my ass and do nothing. And that's a blessing, pal, believe me.
And you know what? And you're on social media showing people that you're doing and going on adventures and traveling. And
we do a lot.
It's very fun to follow.
And I bitch and complain. Last year, we went to Europe in October, and I would rather somebody cut my head off. I did not want to go. I'd been to Ireland and Scotland to play golf. Had never been to the continent. Had no interest in going anywhere over there. We flew into Paris. We spent 3 days there. We went to Italy, spent 9 days, 10 days there. I had more fun than she did. I mean, and now we've gone. I already planned
and drink all through the cities.
It was Italy. I'd move over there today. I'd live there in a New York minute. And we've already got the trip tentatively planned to go to the Mediterranean next May. So I feel good about my decision. I've not second guessed my decision, and I'm happy that I can walk away from this business without somebody giving me a shove out the door.
Did the Reds try and get you to stay?
They did. And I appreciate that.
Did you give pause?
No, I did not. In fact, I wanted to retire last year, but I wanted to go through the entire season and not tell anybody and do the last game on Sunday and call Phil Castellini that night and say, pal, I'm done. But and he got all bent out of shape and said, you can't. And I appreciate that. He said, you owe it to the fans. You owe it to us. And because this was the 150th anniversary, pro baseball, I agreed to come back this year. So it's been fine. It's been fine. The season's gone by quickly.
And it's not just us. It's the places that you've been going have been celebrating. People really do want. They want a chance to say goodbye.
Yeah, you know what? And I've done an informal poll, and I started 3 years ago. Very unscientific, but I would ask people that had retired, whether they be doctors, lawyers, factory workers, school teachers, whatever they did. One question. What do you miss about it? 99.9% of them said the people, not the job. And that's the way I feel. Somebody told me a month ago, you've broadcast between 6,500 and 7,000 baseball games. I don't need to see any more baseball. I've seen enough. Yeah. But I will really miss the people. I mean, I'll miss the people badly because I've made great friends in this business. The guys that broadcast the San Francisco Giants games, John Miller and David Fleming and Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko, are dear friends of mine. Tom Hamilton and Jim Rosenhaus in Cleveland, Chip Carey in Atlanta. The guys that are really genuinely good friends of mine, and they are the kind of people I'll miss. You know, and the people that work in the ballpark. That's going to be hard. Once I'm able to overcome that, I'll be home free without any question.
I wouldn't expect for you to, going back to you talking about that this is it, and you're not the kind of person that we're going to be seeing hanging on and coming back to the ballpark and wanting to have everybody tug at you. And I mean, when it's over, it's over. And
Jason, you may visit
every once in a while. But
you know me too well. We don't see each other very often, but I told a group today I spoke to, I said, I'm not going to be that guy that comes down to the ballpark and hangs around the radio booth, because I've said it about other people, and I'm never going to get anybody an opportunity to say it about me. Jesus Christ, he just retired. Why don't he stay home and enjoy retirement? I'm not going to do that.
I'd come down there and kick your butt, and I probably wouldn't be the only one in that line that would want to do that.
I told the guys that I'm not going to see. I said, in fact, in Atlanta, and Chip Carey is like another son to me. And I said, I'll call you guys, and I'll meet you in Mount Adams. I'll meet you over the Rhine, and we'll have a drink after a game, or we'll have breakfast in the morning, but you will not see me at that ballpark. That'll not happen.
I do think the difference would be, I understand why you wouldn't want to do that, but you would be very welcomed here. People would not think that about you.
They would want
to see you there.
Sherry, I don't know. I wouldn't give them that opportunity.
We saw this when you went to the game, I think, as a fan.
Well, that was an interesting, that was an interesting experiment.
What did that feel like?
Yeah. You know, I had to go down and be on the field for a couple of reasons, and I was off, and I came down. And about 2 days before, Amanda said, well, why don't we sit in the stands? And I said, are you crazy? She said, no. And so we sat in the scout section, which are great seats, by the way. I'd never been down there before. And it was amazing the double takes that people took. But it didn't take long to make them realize I was down there sitting. And I signed stuff and posed for pictures and all of that. And it was interesting. I enjoyed it. I can see where it would be. I'd have a hard time watching the game. That's not a reflection of my dislike of fans. I love fans. I mean, nobody loves them like I do. And they've been great to me, and I in turn feel like I've been good to them. But you want to sit and watch a game, it'd be a little bit difficult to do. But I'll probably do it again.
Is there a fan you've gotten to know over the years that's become your friend? There's just a fan in the ballpark that comes all the time?
One person, you mean?
Like, or more than, like, people you've gotten to know because they're fans and become friends
with?
Well,
yeah. Just an everyday
Yeah, I know some. I've become acquainted with people who are season ticket holders, and I know where they sit, and I'll spy them in the seats. I've got a couple that are a retired dentist, and his wife was a lawyer, and I see them down there, and I wave at them. So you see a lot of the same people. I've never felt that these were the greatest fans in the world. I mean, for my money, I hate to say it, and I think the Cardinal fans are probably the best fans in baseball. You know, the Cub fans would like to think they are, but I could fire a shotgun through that ballpark back in the 70s and 80s when they stunk. So I tell them, don't tell me what a great fan you are. But there's not a group of fans that are more knowledgeable about the game, the intricacies of the game, the way the game should be played, than the people here. They truly appreciate good plays, and if it's made by the other team, they recognize that. I think mm-hmm. that if you could have an aptitude test for the game and have a contest matching up all the cities and fans in the country, this city would win. They know how the game should be played, and I'm appreciative of that.
You alluded to Cubs fans, and you gave an interview to one of my former coworkers and still a good friend, Gordon Whitmire from the Chicago Sun-Times recently about that you regretted criticizing, or you regretted the broad stroke criticism of Cubs fans.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
I can't remember the year it was, but it was when they started. It was Adam Dunn hit a home run.
Yeah, I lost my mind.
You lost your mind, they started bombarding the field with balls and garbage. And
yeah, it was really funny because I made the comment. You know, this is the reason why any baseball fan outside of Chicago never roots for this club to win anything. He had a home run completely out of the ballpark in right field, and all of a sudden 50 baseballs came out of the stands from the bleachers in left and center and right field, and I went crazy. And there was no immediate reaction. And then the next day, my oldest daughter, Dawn, lives in Chicago, and she called me on the phone. I have no idea now. And she said, Dad, what in the world did you say? And I said, what do you mean? She said, I'm sitting here at a sports bar with a girlfriend, and they were running my comments on a crawl at the bottom of the screen. And then, so I said, well, I stirred up a hornet's nest here. So we go back in about 7 weeks later. Mm-hmm. And 2 weeks before we go in, we're in Philadelphia to play the Phillies. And I'm in the clubhouse with the writers, and we're talking. All of a sudden, my cell phone rings, and I look at it, and it's a New York City area code. And I answer it, and the guy said, Marty Brennan. Yeah. He said, my name is so-and-so. He said, I head up MLB security. I'm a lieutenant on the New York City Police Department. They hire people, you know.
Yeah.
Understand you're going into Chicago in 2 weeks. I said, yeah. He said, well, we plan on providing you with security. I said, for what? He said, you remember what you said? I said, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember. He said, well, we take every threat. And that word got my attention.
Yeah.
We take every threat seriously. And so make a long story short, we had security people that went with us when we left Cincinnati to go into Chicago. And when the bus got to the hotel off Michigan Avenue, there were two guys from MLB. And the next day, Tom had his family up there. Dawn, my daughter, lived there and had all their kids. And we went to the Navy Pier where they have rides and all that stuff. And so we're standing there buying tickets. And there's this young Hispanic kid, a college-age kid. And we struck up a conversation with him, and Tom and I are standing there. And Tom had a reason to walk away. And the young guy watched Tom walk away, and he said, he's a baseball broadcaster, isn't he? And we said, yeah. He said, his last name is Brenneman. Yeah. He used to do the Cubs games. Yep. Yeah. He's the guy that said all those terrible things about the Cubs a few weeks ago. And my daughter Dawn said, no, it wasn't him. It was him. I said, thanks a lot. Hang me out to dry.
Well, you, jumping back to that Sun-Times interview, you said you regretted that you more meant the younger generation of Cubs fans.
I grouped all their fans, and I had tremendous feedback from, for want of a better term, quote, the good Cub fan, the people that religiously pay their money to see games for the love of the game, appreciate good plays on both teams, applause accordingly. I was referencing the young people And as I said, they go out there, they drink and get drunk and raise hell. And baseball is simply a venue for them to go out.
Are they any better now?
Yes. Not a lot. No.
Yeah.
No, not a lot.
You've had all these tours. You've had your final time into St. Louis, your final time into Milwaukee and San Francisco, and all these places have done something for you. Mentioned Atlanta. You've yet to have your final time into Wrigley Field. How do you think it's going to go? And it's, you mentioned that, and Tom, your son, was a longtime broadcaster.
He was.
With the Chicago Cubs as well for a while. Any inkling on?
Sure.
What's going to happen there?
I don't know. If they boo me, since it's going to be my last time in there anyway, I'll roast their ass. No, I won't.
I'm kidding. Okay.
No, I wouldn't do that. I think there will be a lot of people that boo now.
Yeah.
I guarantee you there's some that'll never forget what I said. And that's fine. I can live with that. I'm not losing any sleep over that.
Yeah.
We'll play it by ear. I go back in there, I guess in September we go back in. And we do. That's the end of a road trip that has us starting in Seattle, goes to Phoenix, and then goes to Chicago. If they boo, they boo. I'll go out in a blaze of glory.
What's been the hardest goodbye? Have you had it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. As far as the road is concerned, the tough was San Francisco. Yeah. Those guys, they're just special. I've worked during Mike Ruco's entire career as a pitcher in the big leagues, and Kiper was an infielder with the Indians for the most part. And they comprise what may well be the best TV play-by-play duo in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. Every year they're voted by the fan as the best, and they're really good. But they've become dear friends of mine. John Miller and I have become good friends, and the young guy, Dave Fleming, the same. And they went to great ends to make it. They had an artist who was very famous in San Francisco, a young woman who has a relationship with a musician who decided a year and a half ago that if he was going to make it big in the music business, he had to move to Nashville. And it killed her because she was such a big Giants fan. And they knew her well. And they got her to do a portrait of me in her own inimitable style and did it all in about 5 days and overnighted it back to them. And they all signed it. And it's really cool. They brought a tear to my eye because those guys, and then the guys in Milwaukee, Brian Anderson, who's become a superstar in this business at a relatively young age, and Bill Schroeder, who was a catcher in the big leagues with Milwaukee, and they are the kind of people that I'm really not looking forward to not seeing very often anymore.
Yeah, you they had a cake for you
in Atlanta, a red velvet cake.
Is that your favorite?
But it's one of them. And I ate like I was going to the electric chair.
Didn't they get you shoes while you were in Milwaukee?
That was in Milwaukee. The corporate office of Allen Edmonds Shoes, which is a very high-end shoe. And they had one of their executives in the booth when they had this deal for me there. And they gave me a pair of Docksiders with the Reds logo on the side of it. And then they gave me a Titleist golf bag with my signature on it.
Wow.
And, your daughter Ashley posted that on Facebook. That was nice.
Yeah,
it was a nice gift.
Those are people who really know you.
Huh?
Those are people who really know you and love you.
Well, the nice thing is, I just think if I ever had a fan that said they ran into me somewhere and I was a jerk, I'd be devastated. Because I think we all have a certain obligation to people who have grown up listening to you, and they don't know anything more than you and Joe or you and Jeff. And they truly want to be on record as saying, we're going to miss you. We've loved your work.
Yeah.
Why would you be anything but nice to those people? And I've been that way my entire career. I just think we have an obligation. And I know a lot of guys that don't feel the way I do. A lot of guys that treat fans like they're a piece of dirt. And I've never been able to relate to that. And I've been very approachable. And I also think that this is the most provincial city I've ever lived in. When these people decide that you're one of them, it's like two brothers. I can say whatever I want to you, And I can call you the most vile name in the world, yep. but that guy standing behind you better not do it.
Exactly.
And that's the way they are in this fan. They this town, they'll go to bat for you when they decide that you are a part of the fabric of this community.
When did you know that? Was there a defining moment that you're like, that, this is me?
I came on a game at Riverfront. It was a twilight doubleheader right after the All-Star break. And the first game, they went to the bottom of the ninth inning, and the Reds were losing 13-9. And they scored two runs. And Johnny Bench had a man on base, and Bench hit a ground ball to Dave Kingman at first base. And Randy Moffitt was pitching, and all he had to do was cover first, and the game's over. And for some inexplicable reason, he never left the mound. It went as an infield hit, and Tony Perez then hit a three-run home run to straightaway center, and I lost my mind. And I found out the next day that people were calling all night long, all through the night on WLW to hear my call, and all into the next day. And that's when I realized that I had arrived in this town.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a special place to live. I think we who came here from somewhere else have a better understanding about what a great place this is to live and raise kids. And it's got great culture. It's got great sports on a collegiate level. I mean, it might not be winning sports on a professional level, but they are professional sports. And so all the opportunities I've had to leave here, and when it came to crunch time, I could never say yes. It was always, no, I'm not. I'm staying where I am.
You talk that interview we alluded to earlier in Chicago, that you had talked about some of the calls you've gotten over the years from other clubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Giants, the Cubs, and White Sox.
Right.
You talked about that in that interview, and people will go check that out. The one question I had, though, was did you ever get so down on the game, or was there ever anything going on with you that you just thought, I'm done with this and I'm walking away?
No.
No, ever. Never. Never in 46 years.
No. To be honest with you, if I had it all to do over again, I think I would have paid more attention to being around more for my kids than I was. I mean, I think I'm not unlike a lot of guys at a relatively young age, and you're trying to reach whatever point you feel like you've become a success at. And I could never say no to anybody. Mm-hmm. So I do college basketball in the wintertime or professional basketball in wintertime, and I do baseball in the summer. And there were a lot of times that I was not home. And that's why I admire my son so much, because Tom bends over backwards to be there for his kids. And he does less games because that's a priority in his life. And I think part of that is born out of the fact that he's realized as a kid that I wasn't around a lot for things that I should have been around for. I would have changed some of it. I could not have changed all of it, because quite honestly, had I changed all of it, I'd never be where I am today. But we all have regrets about things that we did or things we didn't do in order to get where we are. I don't think anybody can say that's never happened to me.
Well, I mean, the one, I think, you know, we had your daughter Ashley on our podcast. She's doing great stuff at the Kentucky Speedway.
I told you she knows her way around a microphone.
Yeah, we agree.
And she talks so glowingly about you as a father and a grandfather.
I spend more time with you,
and the grandkids love you. And
Ashley came along at a time when I felt like I'd gotten to where I wanted to be. And I think I spent more time with her because of that than I did with Tom or Dawn. You know, I've got great kids. I think the women that I have been married to, Tom and Dawn's mother and Ashley's mom, had more to do than I did because they were around my kids more. But I think you truly feel like you've been a success when you have grown kids and they're good citizens and they have great work ethics. So in that respect, I've been truly blessed. I've never had problems with my kids like a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unjust for a lot of people to point a finger at a parent or parents and say, well, they could have done a better job. A lot of times that's bullshit, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the kids you run with, and it has to do with what kind of intestinal fortitude you have as a youngster to make decisions that are going to impact your life. So I think to blame the parents out of hand is completely wrong most of the time.
Back to baseball.
Yeah.
I wrote about this, what, a month or so ago, about back in, what, 2003 or – yeah, it was around 2003 when there was discussions about putting signs outside the ballpark and rounding third and heading for home. And then there was discussions about whether they put in "this one belongs to the Reds." And your quote to the Inquirer at the time was, "This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen." The county,
and it was.
Can that come back around? Would you be open to that happening? And
I'd be open to it, but I don't care about it one way or the other. I mean, I saw somebody wrote it or said something about it sometime back, and I'm saying, I don't care about that. It doesn't make a difference to me. But what I like is that whoever made that decision, nobody is willing to stand up and say, "Hey, it was me."
Right.
I did that.
I tried to find out who it was.
I know you did.
Yeah, no one wants to say.
Nobody. Be a man and stand up and say yes, because the reasoning was so stupid. People will think that the Reds paid for the ballpark.
Come on, that is
the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So if they did it now, that's fine. If they didn't do it, that's fine too. I'm ambivalent, and that's the worst emotion that can be.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Sherry?
I do have a question about the change of baseball, because, you know, a lot has been made of this brawl. And, you know, without having the longevity, like, you see it and you're kind of stunned. But there's other people, like, in the conversation saying that this has always been part of baseball. Do you feel like you've seen a change? Is this different or just the same?
Oh, I've seen a lot of change in the game. I don't know that I like the game as much as I did. The first thing that comes up is the emergence of analytics and how it plays out and plays into the game. And I'm not a big fan of analytics. I realize that it's here. And it will always be here, but I think that in the coming years, you're going to see the pendulum swing back more toward the middle, where scouts and their contributions will once again become relevant in this game. There are a lot of guys that are out of work that have devoted their lives to the game of baseball that can't find a job now, because many of those jobs and the money that they were paid are being paid out to guys that went to the Wharton School of Business and don't know how to put on a jock strap, but yet they contribute to the game. And the rules that baseball implements, Buster Posey, the Giants catcher, gets his ankle torn up, and they immediately make a new home plate rule and a collision rule relative to a runner and the catcher. And Chase Utley with the Phillies tore up a guy's ankle, or was with the Dodgers at the time, on a playoff game at second base. They immediately passed a rule dealing with how a runner can go into second. In the old days, the players police themselves, and it worked. Now, I understand it's all about money now, and you want to keep the Mike Trouts and the Bryce Harpers and the Christian Yeliches of the world on the field. And so you have to have some means of protection, and the means of protection is an ongoing series of rules that are coming into the game that I think really takes away from the essence of the way the game is played.
Sticking with the brawl, you weren't working that night.
I was watching on TV.
How about if you were calling it, tell us.
Yeah, and that's what I want to ask. Like, if you were, I'm going to be honest with you, Mark, I'm not asking you to comment on this. I was a little disappointed in the radio call that night. I don't know if Tommy and Jeff were just so stunned by it. Like, they weren't painting a picture of it,
right.
And I happen to be
listening. Well, I'd have painted a picture.
And I know you would have, but in looking back and thinking, if you had been calling, is there anything you would have said in the heat of the moment?
I don't know. I might have said something that had got me in trouble. That's one of the top five I've ever seen.
Of all
the years and all the fights that I've seen on the field, that was a fight where I genuinely felt that players were trying to hurt each other.
Worse than Cardinals Reds back in 12?
This one was much better than that. I mean, that one came about because of Brandon Phillips tapping Yadier Molina's shin guard, and all hell broke loose. And in that fight, Jason LaRue suffered a concussion and never recovered.
Ended his career.
Never played again.
Kicked in the head by Cueto.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah. And you were calling that one.
I was. Yes. But there were two things that happened in that fight that I've never seen before. I've never seen a player charge a dugout like Garrett did. And I've never seen a manager, in this case David Bell, go after the other manager. And as a matter of fact, he knocked Clint Hurdle down. And had there not been a coach or two that were there when it happened, I hate to think what might have happened, because David Bell was intent on doing some damage and would have on Clint Hurdle.
What? Where is this passion coming from right this second?
Well, we have a history with them.
Yeah.
That's gone back 2 or 3 years. There's been no love lost between those two teams. They have been a team that their pitchers have led the league and hit batters over a period of years. And as a matter of fact, back in April, we had a player, Derek Dietrich, who hit 2 home runs in Pittsburgh. He became the first player in the history of that ballpark to hit 2 balls in the river the same game. And he stood there and watched them. Now, that incited the pitcher, Chris Archer. Archer threw a pitch behind him later in the game that resulted in both teams getting on the field. That's when Yasiel Puig wanted to take on the whole world. And so this thing has been simmering. And nothing would have occurred in that game the other night had their pitcher not thrown a pitch at Derek Dietrich's head. Both benches had forgotten about that situation. That game would have been played to it in its entirety with nothing untoward happening. But when that guy threw the ball in the area of Dietrich's head, that festering wound opened up again, and that resulted in the fight that they had on
it. Did you know, as you were watching it on television, did you know what was happening?
I knew when Derek had to get away from the pitch, and it was up here, and that's a no-no. You don't throw up there. I mean, you want to throw hit a guy, you want to hit him here, you want to hit him in the butt, you want to hit him in the thigh.
Yep.
That's understandable, but do not throw one up here. And I really feel that baseball right now is being a little bit slow in implementing some type of rule that would minimize or eliminate this thing ever happening again. I proposed a rule change on the air in Atlanta that I think is open and shut. I don't think it's that tough. If it's a starting pitcher, you're suspending for 2 starts. If it's a relief pitcher, you're suspending for 10 games. If you want a fine, that's fine. But the penalties will be imposed without any negotiation, without any arbitration, and any player who comes off the bench that's not in the game, but sit, just like college basketball, if you come off the bench, you're going to be thrown out of that game and you're going to be suspended for 2 games after that. Put that type of penalty in and you watch it disappear in a hurry. It'll be gone.
What do you think about the penalties that were given out in this one?
Well, I thought some of them were not excessive enough, but at the same token, I thought there were some that were too much so. Quite honestly, I thought David Bell would get more than he got because he had already been thrown out of the game. He came from the clubhouse. I thought Puig would get more than he got. I would have given Clint Hurdle more.
Is Clint Hurdle dirty?
You know, I it's tough for me because Clint and I go back to the early 80s.
He's an old school baseball guy.
Yeah, and I've known him forever, and I know his family. But my contention is, and he would take issue with this, they have too much of a history.
Yeah.
And the buck stops with the guy who manages the club. All he has to do is call in his entire pitching staff and say, gentlemen, we have acquired a reputation that we need to do away with. From this day forward, there will be no throwing and hitters. It's over with. And it would be over with.
Yeah. You mentioned David Bell, and kind of going back, I believe this was after the first time into Pittsburgh when they had the brawl with Puig, and you had him on, or you know, you did your pregame interview with him, and you talked to him. He had gotten ejected and gotten really fired up in Pittsburgh, and you were really trying to get something out of him because he's about as laid back and as dry as you. And I remember you were, and I could tell in your pregame interview with him, you were trying like hell to get something out of him.
I was. He was have not.
You ever seen a guy who's that and really that dry and boring, but yet can come like a bat out of hell after in a brawl the way he did? And
he leads a world in ejections.
Yeah,
he's already set a club record. I mean, Lou Piniella was the most bombastic, profane guy in a managerial position I've ever been around.
But he was also kind of like that in interviews and like, in conversation.
Yeah,
you know,
he was
off
loud.
The field. Yeah.
David is the most laid back, like you said. He's the most considerate manager. In spring training, we would have a time to do a radio show every day before a spring training game. If something came up that he was not anticipating, he would text me at 11 o'clock the night before and say, hey, you know, this is, we got a meeting in the morning. Can we do it? What time is good for you? I've never had a manager do that before. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been a joy to work with. I don't know how you can turn it on and turn it off like he can. But, I mean, he gets lit
it's
up right now.
It's truly amazing.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's almost like a Jekyll and Hyde deal.
I mentioned Jeff Jeff Brantley a few minutes ago, and I want to make sure, like, I think he's awesome.
Yeah, he's good.
I think he is really good. And I want to ask you, how good is he?
Well, he knows more about pitching than anybody I've ever been around and can articulate it in a manner that people can understand. There are a lot of guys that know a lot about a technical aspect of a game, but they can't talk about it so a person watching or listening can understand. He's great about that. And what's interesting is, as a kid growing up, he never wanted to be a big league baseball player. He wanted to be a Cincinnati Reds broadcaster. And his mom, his family's confirmed that to me.
Growing up
that
in
he
Mississippi.
And his dad, and he grew up
in
Birmingham.
Alabama. Yeah, Alabama.
And he and his dad would go out in the car at night and fool around with a radio until they could get some reasonable signal from WLW radio, and they'd listen to the Reds games. And when the job came open, he called me on the phone. And I'd seen very little of him over the years. We had a good relationship when he pitched here back in the 90s. And he said, hey, I'm giving serious thought to applying for this job, but I'm not going to do it if I don't have your blessing. I said, you got my blessing.
Yeah.
And so he applied for it. Funny thing is, now they had the news conference in the fall. He's announced as a guy. And so now the wintertime comes, and in January, I call him, and I say, how are things going? Good. I said, you look forward to going to spring training? Yes. Have you listened to any tapes? And he said, for what? And I said, I would listen to some tapes, and they are readily available from WLW, or just to listen to play-by-play, which you've never done.
Yeah.
He said, that's not a problem. I said, really? He said, nah, we'll be good. We did our first spring training game, and I mean, the sweat was pouring off that boy. I mean, he was beside himself. And I said, I told you. I said, everybody thinks this is an easy job. He said, I cannot believe this. And he has worked to become a very good, he's a good play-by-play guy.
He really
tells
is.
You what's happening. He's self-deprecating, which in our booth, you have to be that way. And we talk about other things. I've said to a million times, I'm not the most religious person in the world, but I think when God decided he was going to take Joe Nuxhall, he gave me Jeff Brantley and Tom Brenneman.
Yeah.
I believe that. And we have had a wonderful relationship. We genuinely love each other. Amanda and I, we drove to spring training last spring. I'd never done that before.
Yeah.
We stopped off in Ridgeland, Mississippi, which is a suburb of Jackson, and had dinner with he and Ashley and their kids. And I enjoy his company. He's funny as hell. People took a while because of the accent.
Yeah.
There were a lot of people who would tell me early that first year, I don't know. But now those same people think it's
a genuine accent.
Oh, because
there are people who think if you have a Southern accent, you can't trust someone. Which
not
is,
him.
Right.
That's it.
You can absolutely trust.
What you
trust.
See is what you get.
I mean, is he better than Joe?
I would never say that.
Yeah.
No. Joe was so special.
Joe at his peak, and Brantley at his peak, and maybe Brantley's not at his peak yet.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think Jeff's a work in progress, but the improvement he's made in the years he's been here have been incredible.
Yeah.
And you could draw some parallels because, you know, Joe had never done anything.
He
did Miami University basketball, I think, one year. And he had never done any baseball until he got the job. And he made himself into a decent play-by-play guy. And he had the privilege, I guess, of you know, he worked with Al Michaels for 3 years, and mm-hmm. we all know what kind of career he's had. And then he and I settled in for 31 years, and that equals the longest the two guys have ever been together in this business. Vin Scully and Jerry Doggett did 31 years of Dodgers baseball, and Joe and I, as the years went on, we got closer and closer and closer. As I said, I don't know of two guys who were any closer than he and I were.
You still keep in touch with his family?
I do, his son,
yeah,
because
son,
Kim and his wife, Bonnie, have done an incredible job of extending the legacy of what Joe was all about with, you know, building the fields for, for
the miracle
special interest kids and adults, and maintaining the golf tournament with the proceeds of that go to funding scholarships for kids in Butler County to go to college. Nobody could do a better job than Kim and Bonnie have done, with a lot of help from other people that were dear friends of Joe. And Joe's wife, Donzetta, is doing fine. His oldest son, Phil, who I think is one of the brightest guys I've ever known. So, you know, it's Joe would be very, very proud if he were here today to see where the Miracle Foundation has gone, and the great work that Kim and his wife Bonnie have done to perpetuate his legacy, because kids were very, very important to him. You know, this town has produced Pete. This town had Oscar at the University of Cincinnati. You could throw in other names. There's never been a more iconic sports figure in the history of this town than Joe Nuxhall. In all the years that we worked together, and even since he's been gone, not one time in the 46 years, if Joe were still around, that I'd known him, have I ever had one person ever say anything negative about him. Not one time. I mean, you can have a bad day. In that respect, Joe never had a bad day.
What do you think Joe would say about Brantley as a broadcaster?
Oh, he loved you. He loved Jeff.
Yeah.
He loved Jeff.
I think he would, too.
Yeah, he would. I think he would definitely enjoy Jeff. And I like I said, there are a lot of parallels you can draw between the two of them. You know, both former pitchers, both coming to the business without a lot of experience. Jeff came here after having worked with ESPN, but he was a studio guy.
Yeah.
And he did some work in the College World Series and stuff like that as an analyst, but never any play-by-play. And they both fashioned for themselves pretty good after baseball careers.
Go ahead. Do you think about what's going to happen next? I mean, we've had just this iconic run. We're so very lucky that this is part of our team, and it matters to people. Do you think about, like, game one of next year, what this is going to look like?
Well, you know, I kind of expect that they're going to want me to be at opening day, and I will be there. I'm not going to – I've thought about all of this stuff. If I'm home and I don't have something to do, I'll watch and or listen to a game. But I'm not going to let the schedule dictate what my life is all about when I do my last game in September. If I have plans to go somewhere, I make plans, and then I say, oh, I can't do that because they're going to be playing the Cubs that night. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I'll pay attention. I had a great conversation with Scully, and Vin told me, he said, you know, this is opening up a brand new world for you. He said, rarely do I go to Dodger Stadium, and when he goes, normally he goes after the game starts and he leaves before it's over with. He said, you have to turn the page, and I think I will very successfully be able to do that.
What else you got, Sherry?
How about listening to the people calling the game? Do you think about what that's going to be like?
Yeah.
Well, I listen with a critical ear. I mean, but far be it from me. I mean, I'm not the expert on how to broadcast a baseball game, but I think
a lot of people would say that you are.
Well, I'm not. And I listen, but I do. But I listen to everybody. One of the greatest things that's ever happened to our profession is XM Radio, because now you can listen to every single announcer in the game. Now, you pay for the privilege of doing that, and I have it in my car. And going home at night after a game here, before I'm out of the parking lot, I turn the radio on, I go down the dial and see who's playing, and I tune in and listen while I'm driving home. I think for years and years and years, people have heard that Vin Scully was the best announcer that ever lived. Well, up until he retired 2 years ago, people could listen, and they could draw their own conclusions. Heretofore, nobody could do that. People can listen to John Miller in San Francisco or Brian Anderson in Milwaukee. You know, the list goes on and on. John Sterling, who's truly unique as a voice of the New York Yankees. There's never been another one like John Sterling. And I think that's cool. I think if you're a true baseball fan, the more people you listen to, the better handle you have on comparing – those guys were the people that do your games. But I've also found that no matter how good you might be or how mediocre or how poor, if you keep your job long enough, the people that listen to you in the town that your team plays in thinks you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Makes yep. no difference. Makes no difference.
We're having a lot of fun here.
I
want to ask you some fun questions.
Okay.
Sort of in the Ask Marty mold, which yeah, it's and the fans have to love that.
That's fun.
The questions of baseball or non-baseball, yeah. And you know, one thing I noticed, do you get it? I haven't noticed this, but do you? Maybe they get kind of chucked out, but do you get questions about politics?
No. Yeah. Although I made a comment the other night on the air that incurred the wrath of a number of people.
So then you should repeat it here.
Yeah, what was I did not hear this one.
And it was right off the top of the broadcast in in Atlanta, and I yeah. felt like I was compelled to do it. And that is, you know, our thoughts and prayers went to the folks in El Paso and the people in Dayton, and all I said was, it is beyond my comprehension that the politicians that we have in this country, either side of the aisle is irrelevant. They have to be able to come up with a solution to minimize or eliminate the mass shootings that our country has become noted for. And then I had people said, we love your broadcast, but we're not interested in hearing about what you think about the National Rifle Association. I sent a text back and said, "Guy, the hell I don't."
Yeah.
I don't understand it. I swear to God, I do not. And I'm a Republican, and I'm proud to say that. I voted for the guy in the White House. I don't know whether I'd vote for him again. It can't be about politics. It can't be watching people killed. And a guy called at 2 a.m. in the morning in Dayton from a deep sleep and told that his sister was killed when she's in the Oregon, whatever it is, a district in Dayton, having a big time like our over the Rhine. I don't understand it. I swear to God. I mean, if it's as simple as eliminating assault rifles, what in the hell does a normal citizen have the right to own? Why does he have an assault
Preach
weapon?
Preach it, man. Preach
I don't
it.
Get it.
I don't get it either.
I mean, I don't know anything that's upset me more on the heels of El Paso than what happened in Dayton. And I just said what I said. And I said, if I'm going to get a lot of heat from it, then I'm man enough to deal it because I believe in it.
Well, you also have a platform and people listen to you. And I mean, it's almost like, could you even live with yourself if you didn't say it?
I made up my mind that afternoon when I found out about the Dayton thing. I said, I've got to say something about it. I used to talk about unions. I ain't a big union guy.
Yeah.
I belong to a union that didn't do a damn thing for me. The American Federation of Radio and Television Artists that now had joined forces with the Screen Actors Guild.
Sounds a lot like the newspaper guild that I was in St.
Yeah,
Paul.
They didn't do it. They never did anything for me, and I paid upwards of $1,000 a year to be a member.
Yeah.
And I would comment periodically about unions, and you talk about something that gets people worked up.
Oh, yeah.
Not, we don't care what your opinions are. That's
fine. Do you
ever
criticize the baseball union?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That'll get them fired
But I
up.
Criticize ownership, too. I mean, I pray to God that there's not another work stoppage when this next collective bargaining agreement comes up, but it's going to come up in 2 years, and there are going to be some very sensitive issues that are going to have to be negotiated in order to eliminate or avoid a work stoppage. But we haven't had one. We haven't had a work stoppage in this century.
Right. But no, we haven't.
They got a shot unless they can figure out how to come to a meeting of the minds on a lot of sensitive issues that are going to be put on the table.
What's at the top of that list?
Well, I think the changes, trying to figure out a way to, one of them, that's a minor point. I think the players have reached a point now where they feel like they're not getting their share of the pie, despite the salaries that they're making. And I don't know how they're going to go about doing that.
Good luck to them.
I don't know. It's unfortunate that we didn't have a commissioner back in the 60s with the foresight that Pete Rozelle had about revenue sharing. If we'd have had that then, we'd have never had work stoppages like we've had in this game since the early 70s.
I'll say this. I've said this for a while, that it might be the most powerful labor union in all of America.
There's no question. They've never lost.
Never.
They have never lost. They are undefeated. John L.
That's
Lewis
amazing.
Would be praising Marvin Miller and
oh,
all
those
the
guys
people.
Would all be. Yeah.
No
I mean,
question.
Baseball is part of the fabric of America, especially here.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine the summer going by without it somewhere.
We had that in 94.
Well, right? That was the most damaging when they eliminated, we didn't have the World Series. That was the most damaging strike that it's ever been because there were people who washed their hands of the game, and a lot of those people had never come back.
Sticking to politics. Do you actively follow politics? Are you
really I read a lot.
Local and national?
Local and national.
Do you know any, or do you keep in touch with any local politicos? Are you?
Well, Joe's a good buddy of mine.
Joe Deers.
Alex is a good buddy of mine.
Treon Tefila.
Yeah.
I could see you and those guys hanging out. You and Joe having a beer.
I love Joe. I love Alex. In fact, I had somebody say to me within the last 3 months, would you consider running for public office? I said two things. One, I'm too old. Secondly, I got way too many skeletons in my closet.
I cover city council, so I feel like that's a good starting point.
I said that
shake
ain't
things up in there.
If you were to run, though,
what would it be? Open season. You talk about thick skin. I don't know if my skin's thick enough.
So what do you think about the idea that we have Major League Soccer now? Do you feel like it's a competing thing? Is there room for
I think definitely it's had an effect on our game. I think if this were a winning baseball team, it would be nothing but a tick. But the fact that – and I give those folks a lot of credit. They've sunk a lot of money into that thing. They've got a soccer stadium that will be built exclusively for them. But at the end of the day, they've got to be successful. And if the day were to come where they weren't, and our baseball team was, this is a baseball city, was then, is now, and forevermore will be. So I would recommend that they figure out a way to be consistently successful. I think our baseball team is at a point right now where they are seeing that little flicker of light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. I think Dick Williams and Nick Kroll have done a great job. Every night they play, they have an expectation of winning. Now,
it makes it exciting.
The last 3 or 4 years, that was not the case. They have a rotation that is set up next year with Trevor Bauer and Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo that will be the top three of any rotation in our division. And so I think this club has done an amazing number of things to change the culture. I think in any walk of life, you have to have a mindset that you are a winning culture or you are a losing culture, and it all has to do with people. And I think they've done some things and brought some people in. Derek Johnson has done an amazing job as a pitching coach for this club. It was the greatest hire that they had, the greatest move they made of any of them in the offseason. He's going to be around for a long time. And so I think that this club is on the right track, and that's something I could not legitimately say at any point in the last 3 years.
Well, Marty, Jerry, you want to ask the last question, Marty, so the floor is yours.
Sherry?
Can you say it for us?
And this one belongs to the Reds.